First Years, a podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Today, we're talking about time travel. Welcome, everybody, to episode 25 of First Years. If the audio sounds a little bit different, it's because we have a different setup in a different location right now. And it's a little bit echoey, so you might hear footsteps, you might hear dog footsteps, but no worries. We're going to continue on and talk about Prisoner of Azkaban, and not just Prisoner of Azkaban, but the last two chapters of Prisoner of Azkaban. A lot happens in these chapters, so we're going to dive right in a moment, but I wanted to give you a house points update. Hufflepuff has 155 points, Slytherin has 95 points, Gryffindor has 20, and Ravenclaw has 55. We still have three more opportunities to win house points, including today. So rate and review and leave your Hogwarts house in the review if you want to win house points. Also, later on in this episode, I will ask you to send me your theories. And if you do, you will also win house points. Also, participating in our Mindful Magic Monday. And we're going to have another House Cup cocktail night for a last chance to win house points before we declare the winner and then determine who is going to be the winner of our giveaway. So let's dive right in. Harry wakes up and Snape is lying his face off about what really happened down in the Shrieking Shack. And at first he's taking the blame off of them, which is interesting, and you think, oh, okay, he's covering for them. But then he tries to get them expelled because of their quote-unquote interference. He says, "Consider, Minister, against all school rules, after all the precautions put in place for his protection, out of bounds, at night, consorting with a werewolf and a murderer, and I have reason to believe he has been visiting Hogsmeade illegally too." This feels very much like a connection to Lupin, actually. Like we were talking about last episode, about how Lupin broke every precaution and rule Dumbledore set out to protect him and the other students. And now Snape is calling Harry out for doing the exact same thing. So when Harry wakes up, Madame Pomfrey mistakes Harry's concern about Black, thinking that Harry thought Black escaped. But we find out that Sirius Black is actually about to be kissed by Dementors. He has been captured thanks to Snape. Dumbledore shows up to talk to Harry and Hermione. Snape asks him that surely he doesn't believe Black's story. And it's a real standoff moment here between Dumbledore and Snape, which I found really interesting to read this scene where it's this power dynamic, because I feel like a lot of people do not push back against Dumbledore a bunch, but Snape absolutely does in this moment. So he says, quote, "You surely don't believe a word of Black's story," Snape whispered, his eyes fixed on Dumbledore's face. "I wish to speak to Harry and Hermione alone," Dumbledore repeated. Snape took a step toward Dumbledore. "Sirius Black showed he was capable of murder at the age of 16. You haven't forgotten that, Headmaster. You haven't forgotten that he once tried to kill me?" "My memory is as good as it ever was, Severus," said Dumbledore quietly. We see that, legally, there really isn't anything we can do for Sirius. The Ministry won't believe two 13-year-olds, and Dumbledore helped put Sirius into jail because he wasn't aware of the switch of the Secret Keepers, which is crazy. And Lupin's word doesn't count because, quote, "I might add that werewolves are so mistrusted by most of our kind that his support will count for very little. And the fact that he and Sirius are old friends," unquote. The old friends thing makes sense to me. What doesn't make sense to me is that people hate werewolves so much that apparently all of them are liars? How does that make any sense? What werewolves were there that ruined the image of werewolves for everyone? And when Harry pushes back about how Sirius is innocent and he doesn't deserve this and that they need to do something, Dumbledore says, quote, "Listen to me, Harry. It is too late. You understand me? You must see that Professor Snape's version of events is far more convincing than yours," unquote. Which is really frustrating, but also this sentence feels like it calls out the injustice we see in the wizarding world, and in our world as well. Snape is a more powerful figure here, and so his word is more trustworthy than theirs because they're younger, and for some reason we don't trust kids as much or don't realize that adults lie just as much as kids might. When I asked you guys earlier in this book about the systems in place and whether or not this was a breaking of trust of those systems, I really think this seals the deal. And it's tough because we, just like Harry and Hermione, know the truth. But a product of this world and these power dynamics within the systems that are in place is that the situation needs evidence, and we've lost it. Pettigrew escaped. And Dumbledore does have a good point here. Sirius has not been acting like an innocent man. He attacked the fat lady, and he entered the common room with a knife. And I wonder, like I mentioned last episode, if Sirius would have always committed this crime or not. Because he does say that he wants to commit the crime he was imprisoned for. And I wonder if he just accepted his fate, marked as a criminal, and decided he wanted to follow through. But I also wonder what an innocent man would have done. And I say that knowing full well that Sirius is innocent. But what I mean is, what kind of behavior would have pointed to him being innocent? Because the only thing I can think of is inaction. Sirius Black couldn't go ahead and try to talk to the ministry. I haven't heard of any wizarding lawyers that come in and work on appeals for prisoners in Azkaban. So, what would have been the right course of action? Dumbledore does have one more solution up his sleeve, though. And that is to create more time. We have finally reached the answer to how on earth Hermione has been navigating this year, with a time turner that McGonagall gave her at the beginning of the year so she could go back in time and take more classes. And now they're going to use it to save Buckbeak and Sirius. And we find out that this is a serious piece of magic. McGonagall had to really convince the ministry to give it to Hermione. And Hermione says, quote, "We're breaking one of the most important wizarding laws. Nobody's supposed to change time. Nobody," unquote. And she goes on to describe that terrible things have happened to wizards who meddle with time. A lot of them have accidentally ended up killing their past or future selves. So this is something really serious. So why does Hermione have one? If the laws are so strict and the consequences so dangerous, why would they let Hermione have one for school? Wouldn't they just tell her to choose fewer classes and there was nothing they could do? And why do time turners exist if not to change time? And we'll go into the concept of if it's even possible to change time in a little bit. But why do they exist? And why is one in the hands of a 13-year-old witch? But regardless, Hermione has it, so Harry and Hermione end up being able to get Buckbeak out literally just in time before the executioner exits the hut. Then they have to wait for everyone to get under the willow and for things to play out before they can interfere. And last chapter ended with Harry seeing someone familiar across the lake who conjured the Patronus. And we find out here that Harry thought it was his dad. And he even questions that if Pettigrew can be alive after all these years, why was it impossible that his dad would be too? And that is so heartbreaking to read, because Harry doesn't have someone like that in his life. And like we said last episode, that Harry is processing it more and is angry about it, he might be realizing what he's been missing out on. But what we do learn is that his dad does show up, just not in the way that he thought. Harry himself conjures the Patronus, fully formed into a stag, which was what his father's animagus form was. Harry saves their past selves from dying at the hands of the Dementors. They see Snape take everyone back up to the castle, then they're able to set Sirius free with Buckbeak, and they make it back just in time. But when they discover that Sirius Black is gone, we see Snape lose it yet again. And it reminds me of the teacher in The Incredibles, where he knows something is up with Dash, but he can't prove it, so he's just like super frustrated even though he has like video evidence. But with Snape, his behavior is kind of incredible, and I'm surprised that not more is done in this moment. Fudge is really the only one who says he's unbalanced, although Dumbledore says he's just disappointed. But still, I think the behavior is extreme, especially around children. And then, in another completely unacceptable move, Snape officially outs Lupin as a werewolf. And Lupin has decided to resign because parents won't want him teaching, and he could have hurt somebody the night before. However, I feel like this is yet again Lupin being a little overdramatic and blaming his being a werewolf on everything bad that happens. And I'm speaking specifically about his worry about how he could have hurt somebody. Because Lupin was only distracted last night from taking his potion because of the discovery that Peter Pettigrew was alive still and that Sirius wasn't a murderer. And the probability of something like that happening again to make him so distracted that he won't have taken his potion is probably very, very low. So I really don't see why he wouldn't be able to stay, aside from the prejudiced parents that are going to complain. Once Lupin leaves, Harry asks Dumbledore about the prediction that Trelawney made, and Dumbledore confirms that it was a real one, and that makes her total of real predictions 2. So Trelawney isn't really a fraud, she's a real seer. It just doesn't work like how she makes it out to. It comes randomly, and she can't remember when she makes real predictions. So it's interesting. I wonder if her behavior is like a cover-up or like a way to make her feel like she's more of a seer than she feels that she is, since she has only had 2 predictions in her life. And I wonder what the other one was. We learn more about debts between wizards in these last 2 chapters. So we know that Snape owed James because James saved his life. So that is why he was trying to save Harry in book 1. To clear that debt. Because it's not just a random debt, it's an actual bond that forms between wizards when they save each other's life. And Dumbledore makes a good point here. Pettigrew owes Harry now. And having a servant of Voldemort in debt to Harry probably isn't a good thing for Voldemort. So how do you think that'll come back into play later? And as our trio heads back home on the Hogwarts Express, we find out that Sirius was in fact the one who gave Harry the firebolt, although he didn't jinx it, and he lets Ron keep the owl, which is really sweet, and gives written permission so that Harry can start going to Hogsmeade, which is also amazing. And all of this makes Harry's disappointment about not being able to leave the Dursleys better, since he can't move in with Sirius because Pettigrew escaped. But Ron says that Harry should come stay with him at some point because the Quidditch World Cup will be held over the summer. So we have that to look forward to. Before I jump into some info on time travel, I want to ask you guys, what are you expecting out of book 4, Goblet of Fire? I would love to hear your theories on Instagram at firstyearspod, or you can email it in at firstyearspodcast@gmail.com. Anyone who sends in theories will earn house points. Okay, time travel. I said over our last 2 episodes that I think chapters 17 through 20 are the most pivotal chapters in Harry Potter as a whole series. But there is a lot packed into these last 2 chapters, with something that is very central to the plot of book 3, and that is time travel. it slips under the radar for most of the book. We just see Hermione suffering, trying to get all of her classes in and doing all of her homework, and she kind of appears and reappears in a bunch of different times. But this is a huge revelation for the wizarding world. Time travel is possible. At least backward time travel is, and there are serious rules about it. I found a few sources that explain different types of time travel that we see in stories. So there are a few different ones. We have the everything already happened theory, which is time is happening all at once, people always went back in time, things played out how they were supposed to. There's the fixed points theory, where big events have already happened and those can't be touched, but tiny details can. So we see this multiple times in Doctor Who, where the Doctor cannot change certain big events. There's the multiverse theory, where going back in time and changing history doesn't alter the original timeline, but creates an entirely separate one. So we see this in Avengers Endgame. Then there's the butterfly effect, where there is one timeline, you change things in the past, and then the future looks very different, which is what we see in the Umbrella Academy. The first one, the everything already happened / single continuum theory, is what we see here in Prisoner of Azkaban. Harry and Hermione were already meant to go back and save Buckbeak and Sirius. That's why Harry sees himself doing the Patronus. So Buckbeak never actually died. This already was happening. What's interesting here is that when Dumbledore is at Hagrid's hut, while Buckbeak's execution is about to happen, and they find Buckbeak has gone, it says, quote, "How extraordinary," said Dumbledore. There was a note of amusement in his voice, unquote. So Dumbledore had this planned from the beginning. We know that he asks Harry and Hermione to jump back in time to save both Buckbeak and Sirius. So it makes me wonder if he knew Sirius was innocent ahead of time. Because why would he plan this all? Or did he just plan the Buckbeak part earlier? And this gets really interesting when you think about the rules around time turners. If time works this way in Harry Potter, where everything was already meant to happen and you can't really change things unless you were to cross yourself or be seen by someone, how does that affect the rules? Was there really a risk of Harry and Hermione getting caught? Or would they have always succeeded because they were always meant to? In which case, are the people who crossed themselves, were they always meant to cross themselves? Where does free will come into play? Or is all of this fate? Let us know at firstyearspodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us at firstyearspod on Instagram and Twitter. This is our second to last episode on Prisoner of Azkaban. We will be doing another episode talking about the movie and how it differs from the book. And then we will have our house cup cocktail night. To earn more house points, we'll have a giveaway for the house cup. We're also going to have a giveaway because we are coming up on the first anniversary of First Year's Podcast, and I'm very excited about it. And then we're going to dive right into Goblet of Fire. So I hope you guys are as excited as I am, and we will see you guys next time. First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. All sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeyer. Please remember that staying a Harry Potter fan is the biggest form of revolt that you can have, and we are committed to continuing to make this fandom and this community safe and welcoming.